On this episode of Sales Burrito, we're going to go all in and why you should go all out to maximize your salary using the art of negotiation. You may think that you're not worth it, but believe me, you are. So put all your chips on the table and stay tuned to Sales Burrito. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time! Welcome to Sales Burrito! The premier podcast for today's sales engineers working in technology sales, created by SEs for SEs. With your host, Enrique Barreto and Dave Siles.
Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome back to Sales Burrito. Man, make me want to get the chips out and shuffle up and deal here with that intro.
I don't want to deal with chips, specifically with you, because you took a lot of my money. Probably last year we were in Denver, but I digress. I don't want to spill your secrets or anything like that. I'm just going to say that anytime we talk about poker, yes, I get excited, but I also have to hold my wallet. Just saying, brother. Just saying.
Well, I appreciate you protecting my my secret there and my side business. But no, no, it's I do love poker and I love playing the odds. And you know, one of the things you have to do in poker is really know how to kind of negotiate your position and maximize your profit, as they so to speak, and rack and stack those chips. And same thing comes true when you're in the throes of negotiating a new job and you're getting down to that salary. You've been selected as a candidate. And so really kind of knowing what your worth is to the company and maximizing your value as the sales engineer joining them and really getting the most dollar for what you can provide the company, that ROI is kind of key. So, you know, I think using the poker analogy is a great way to start, my friend. So, you know, the pre-flop, you know, was where you get your chips in before the your force bets, I should say, right? So you have your position, you're going to make the entry into the game, and you know, it starts by knowing your worth in the market, right? With what you feel you can add to the company, and you know, what your relative value is to the company in terms of what you're bringing to the table, and that all comes down to knowing your market rate. And for a sales engineer, you know, coming into the negotiation phase, you know, you have to do your homework, right? Before you ever get to the game, having a good understanding yourself of kind of what the going rate is, because you obviously know the HR team is stacking chips against you to try to maximize their value, because they've done the same analysis.
And it's important that you know your market rate, right? Because I think a lot of inexperienced sales engineers often miss the mark when it comes to that. Sometimes some they believe that they're a certain rate above the average. Maybe they've talked to their colleagues about it, maybe they're not. And some of them also sometimes think it because of the city that they live. Maybe it's a zone, you know, zone one city, which is a higher salary versus a lower city, right? Some of those things can fluctuate when it comes to looking for, you know, the art of negotiating the salary that you want. The research is important. Understanding the averages, understanding, you know, the median of what, you know, typical individuals within that city gets paid are simply important. And you can't go, you should not go to a negotiator just winging it. That's basically the bottom line.
Yeah. So where do you think are some of the best resources? Obviously, as we sit on the table as hiring managers, you know, we've got, you know, greenhouses and Glassdoor backend feed surveys, you know, LinkedIn salary studies. You know, we have a lot of intelligence in our hands. You know, if you're, you know, putting yourself in the shoes of the candidate, you know, what's your recommendation for them? Where should they be going to, you know, kind of source, you know, the market rate and, you know, get the pulse of, you know, what's the going market for not only them, but, you know, the kind of the average that they should expect to see for the market they do live in. Because obviously you're absolutely right. You know, San Francisco and New York City are definitely different than, you know, if you're living in Iowa.
Well, to me, you know, I have so many sources, Dave, that I've used throughout the years. I know I have used Glassdoor to look at the average salaries of a company, but I typically take it to different approaches. Like, for example, I'll look, you know, one site that you taught me to use a long time ago is Crunchbase. I will go to Crunchbase. I will look at the data of that organization, be able to try to figure out, you know, are they hiring? Are they not hiring? What kind of, you know, how, you know, what information they can give me to show me that that company is profitable, or try to, you know, or allude to the fact that they're being cash flow positive. I will say the other things that I look, Dave, is I will look at, you know, I'm subscribed to LinkedIn and I have an enhanced account within LinkedIn. And that means that it actually gives me salary insights of the different organizations that are, you know, large enough within LinkedIn. It's not going to give you everything that you need, right, from maybe a smaller company. But if it's a large organization, you're going to find information from a salary perspective in LinkedIn as well. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things a candidate can always do, especially if they get into the point of being offered the job, is hopefully during the approach through the sales process, with selling themselves, I should say, the sales process, right, but the interviewing process, you know, that they have a good understanding from the recruiter. You know, what is the expected value for this position, right? No one should go into a more senior role, you know, without having an expectation of what the company, you know, is thinking, right? Every company has got salary bands. Every company has already kind of set some marks in there. Obviously, you still want to maximize your value, but, you know, you want to know, you know, folding before the flop comes out is valid, right? If you know it's never going to get to the point where you need or, you know, should be paid, you know, making that decision of whether or not, you know, you stay in the game or not is a valid answer. So hopefully you can get some of that intelligence that way as well. Now, granted, you know, this is where the art of the bluff comes in, because sometimes, you know, the companies are obviously doing the best they can to hide their cards, so to speak, right? And we don't play poker with cards face up. And for that reason, you know, there's always two sides to the game.
But you make a very good point, right? I mean, one of the things that I've seen in successful sales engineers, right? And this is even me as a sales leader, I had to evolve and grow through this different way of thinking. I do appreciate when a applicant asks me, what is the minimum? What is the minimum OT, right? Because ultimately, if that applicant is, you know, well cemented into an organization and they're looking to make a change, you know, they don't want to go through seven interviews to try to figure out, oh, the budget that you have is 30%, 40% lower than what I'm making right now, right? So asking that and being bravado and saying, what is the minimum OT? It should be the first thing that you ask before you take any type of call from, you know, next steps from a recruiter, right?
Yeah. I think it's getting the level set right. You know, are you in the right stakes of game, so to speak? Keep the poker analogy going, right? I mean,
absolutely. You know, no, let's do it.
You can play a 1-2 game, you can play a 5-10 game, you can play a 100-200 game, or you can, you know, play for, you know, yeah, sky's the limit. But yeah, you really got to understand, are you sitting at the right table with the right game? So for sure, you know, but if, let's say, you get to that point and then, you know, you're looking for, you know, the initial offer, you know, what I would call the flop in a poker game, you know, it's really the opening salvo. You know, the company's going to give you a number, very likely not going to be their final number. Could be. I know some people who say that, you know, the number they give is their best and final, but, you know, I've always seen it, especially in the sales side of the world, and that's an opening salvo. And, you know, in the sales world, I always expect, you know, a good sales team or sales engineer in this case to actually take that as, you know, the opening the point to negotiate their value.
Well, it's all about selling, right? At the end of the day, why would I want to have somebody in my team that is not going to negotiate their salary and take the first salary that is offered? I mean, if anything, it creates a doubt on me, because then, you know, if you want to go get what you want, you want to be able to ask for what you want. And if you're just getting what you've been given, then, you know, the chances are that you're going to be leaving money on the table. Now, there's going to be some circumstances that it is what it is. But to your point, when you're looking for a great sales engineer, when you're looking for somebody that is going to make an impact and a difference in your business fairly quickly, yeah, the prices are there to actually be negotiated.
Yeah, and let's say, you know, if you get to that position and they say, this is our best and final, you know, that's where you still can raise the stakes in the game. Just because that's the number doesn't mean that's the way the final number has to be broken out. Because remember, in sales, you know, we all work on a variable, right? There's going to be some port that's going to be, you know, committed on a monthly basis as a base salary. And then there's a variable component, which you're going to make up the balance of your on-target earnings. And so if you think about, you know, if you're betting on yourself, the implied pot odds say, you know, I will take less base and maybe more upside because I'm betting on myself and willing to take that risk. And to the business, you may be helping their budget, but then, you know, if you're able to overachieve it in their comp plan structure and such that you can overachieve it, you may be able to still make the same amount of money you're trying to achieve by still cutting them into that happy medium where you're going to make the hiring team's goal for their number, and you're going to give yourself, you know, the chance to really excel. And, you know, that split sometimes is not negotiable in some businesses, especially in the sales engineering side. Sometimes it's pretty fixed, but where it is, I mean, always ask for it, right? And being able to bet on yourself and, you know, take some upside exposure and play the pot odds.
100%. I mean, when I'm looking at OTEs, for example, if somebody starts talking about different OTEs that show me that as an individual, that person is looking to go all in on them by taking a smaller fix in a larger variable, to me, that's key. To me, that tells me that person is going to go hunt, is going to actually make a difference. Now, let me ask you this, Dave. Since we're doing the analogies of poker, when you're folding, what does that mean to the audience?
Well, I mean, folding, you fold for three reasons, right? The first is it's not worth the implied money that you had to put into it for that bet to make it worth it. And the risk is a reward scenario is not there. Two, you're just beat. You know you're lost and you don't want to show the fact that you lost. And, you know, you can always fold and walk away and say, you know, the opportunity cost of sitting this one out and keeping some in the reserve to play the next hand, you know, it's the opportunity cost of staying, this is not the right one. The next one's where I'm going to take and stack it, right? And so, you really, it's not a shame to walk away, right? And honestly, you know, in any interview, you have the power to walk away. You know, just because they made you an offer, you shouldn't have to feel obligated to take it. And I think some people do. You know, they think, you know, this is the only offer I'm going to get. And especially if they've always been interviewing for a while, and they really need to self-evaluate, you know, is it the right fit for them? Will they be happy in it? And, you know, the opportunity, if you can't say yes to all those, you know, I'm a firm believer in do what makes you happy. And, you know, no is a valid answer, and the power to walk away is always there.
So I agree with you on the power to walk away. I will say that where I disagree, and just hear me for a second, right? Let's say that we've gone through the dance, we're going through the pre-flops, we're going through the flop, we're going through this process, right? And all of a sudden I'm telling you what I call, I need a block commit from you, right? That block commit saying, hey, this is the salary that you wanted, we negotiated. If I give you an offer, I need your blood commit that you're going to sign on it, right? I typically try to make sure that before I get to that blood commit, and a blood commit for those that don't know is somebody that you're writing in blood that you're going to be working for me. What I typically do is I make sure that all your needs are met as a sales engineer. And by the time I give you an offer, I know that I'm going to get your blood commitment that you're going to be working for my team. Because often it has happened to me. Somebody will come up and say, okay, I gave you my blood commit, but now I went to another company. They're using that offer to negotiate with another company. That IT is a small world. So for those that are listening, you don't want to do that move. If you're going to be all in, be all in. But make sure that you're truly all in. Don't play with the other person.
That's right. You know, if you want to be a rounder and play in this game, you know, you got to be able to get a seat at the table. And then, you know, it's a small community. You're absolutely right. You can get blackballed and pushed out. But I'm a firm believer, you know, if you do give a blood commit, you know, you're essentially not folding at all. You're all in. You've made the decision and you're riding it. But, you know, I think between the blood commit and the fold, you know, there's the art of negotiation, right? And it's raising the stakes. You know, you should really be able to start defending your value and go back to the interview and go through the process of what you proved to them through the interview and get them to reaffirm why they thought you were the best candidate and what they thought about you and the contribution you can add to the company, and really use that power position, because, you know, they're under the gun, you're under the gun, right? You're going to be in that place where you're competing for the job and you want to maximize your value, right? So when it gets to the turn, so to speak, you know, you're in the middle of the negotiation. You have to kind of, you know, show your value and push the value as much as you can. And really, you're trying to maximize the ROI, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you want more money. They want the best resource for the most economical price that meets their budget. And you're going to get to a point where you're going to be happy and, you know, kind of all in, and some speak. And, you know, when you get to that all in perspective, you're going to be either the winner or the loser. And, you know, I think when you put it the blood commit way, it really is kind of going to be, you're both going all in. And if you're at that position, then it's not necessarily going to be a winner loser in that situation. You're going to be stacking chips with a winner-winner.
Yeah, 100%. So going back to one thing you said, or a couple of points you said, from an under the gun power position, right? From thinking on poker perspective, right? Know this, sales engineers, right? Sales engineering leaders are going to have a bench of pool of talent that they're interviewing, right? So understanding your competition is super important. So don't, you know, ask, you know, I know that January has been the month of our previous episodes on asking the why, right? Ask the question, who else is interviewing for this position? Is there somebody internally that is interviewing for that position? Because there's always, you know, I need to make sure that I'm hiring the best resource for the organization. And there's not one. There should be several resources, right? So I always have to have my diversification when I'm doing negotiating with a sales engineer, right? And to your point, right, the re-raise and the all-in, once you're there, it's about a win-win. It's about maximizing your ROI while at the same time that I'm seeing a value and I'm seeing an upgrade within my sales engineering team of someone that is going to make an impact and a difference from day one. And as I always have said to a lot of people and a lot of the sales engineers that I've hired worldwide, I always surround myself with people that are smarter than me. And that's what has made me successful. So if when I see the value on that and they're able to demonstrate the value, it's a no-brainer, all in.
And I will say, just because you've won and they feel you won and you're stacking the chips, doesn't mean it's over, right? Really, that's when the game starts, right? Because you're going to get dealt the next hand. And I will say, if you didn't say you didn't maximize your value to 100% because you can only get to 75% of where you really wanted to be, if you put yourself in the right position, you know, the next round and the next hand you're dealt, you have a chance to kind of go back and win that balance of 25%. And that's just you know, getting to work, you know, proving your worth. Again, if you maximized your odds up front and you have a strong upside, you know, overachieving it. And so it is a little bit of an art and science. You know, obviously we put in a kind of a game theory thought here, but at the end of the day, you know, you're playing for yourself, you're playing for your family. You know, the company's playing, you know, to grow their team. And you know, at the end of the day, you're really growing together, and you're going to be essentially not playing head to head anymore. You're going to be playing essentially tag team poker. So yeah, that's the benefit of it. And it's a fun game, right? I mean, you know, the one reason I like poker is the strategy and the skill of it is just as much as the thrill sometimes is, you know, kind of chasing down the deal. And yeah, there's a lot of parallels there.
But it's important. And obviously we can close the episode after this. It's important because I do see, as sad as this may be, I have seen sales engineers not negotiating. And I just don't get it. I don't know if you're not negotiating on something as stressful as your salary, I don't, you know, you have to then do some check and balances on how are you going to be dealing with a prospect that is going to be, that is going to be difficult with you if you're trying to sell them a product, right? Because if you're just going to fold and you're just going to go with, you know, the tails between your legs, that's not what you're being hired. You're being hired to make a difference. And yeah, you have to take that stand. And taking that stand means taking calculated risk, right? So you can get a great result. So, you know, take this to heart. Always negotiate. There's no doubt about it. You know, what's the worst that can happen? You know what? The worst that can happen is that if there's not a win-win, as long as you're safe on that decision, you're going to be good.
Well, we'd love you to take a chance and bet on us. And you can do that weekly by listening to the podcast, sharing it with your friends. Our network continues to grow because we get in a lot of great word of mouth advertising, and we can't appreciate more than you believe. Send your friends to the favorite podcast platform to subscribe to Sales Burrito. We're always available as well at salesburrito.com. We do post these to YouTube as well. So check out our YouTube channel and subscribe. We hope you really enjoyed this Sales Burrito show. Be sure to follow us up for next time. And until then, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.
Amen, brother. Have a great day, everyone.
We hope you've enjoyed the Sales Burrito Show. Be sure to subscribe to catch future episodes wherever you catch your favorite podcast. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sales Burrito. Until next time, keep the chips and salsa going and the knowledge flowing.
All right, so let me ask you here. After the show, the chips are on the table. The crumbling chips are on the table.
The crumbling chips? What do you mean?
Crumbling chips are on the table. I was going to give you your after the show segment.
Well, if the crumbly chips are on the table, listen, I'll have another old fashioned drink. I don't know. I'll start crying.
Let me put it another way. You got $5. Are you betting on the new guy? You're betting on the seasoned professional.
I am betting on the seasoned professional. Unless I saw some potential on the new guy that shows me that his go-to-market will be quick. That's what it's a risk and reward, right? Seasoned professional knows the fundamentals, knows the swimming lanes, knows what typically is expected in a sales gig. A new guy, depending on where they're coming from, right? You have to explain some of that stuff. You have to make sure that they see the value on themselves, the value on their product, the value of making money. So that's the hard part. But I've seen it where some newbies have made it quicker than old-fashioned sales engineer.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, one of the things I've done in my career, and I've got a lot of success with it, and I'm pretty proud of it, is I've been able to take and make that bet on the new guy and turn him into pretty profitable. But, you know, it does come from the position you sit in, right? I mean, I had the fortunate position to have either a product that was slowly maturing. So, you know, the fact that we could take a flyer on a few people because we were growing the market slow enough to support it was one thing. And then the second time around, you know, we were a juggernaut already and growing fast enough that we had enough in the bank, or so to say stacked in front of us, that we could afford to spend a few of those chips and take some risk on some flyers to see if we could grow them into a force multiplier.
I'll add to this that it also depends on the product that is being sold. So for example, if it's a generalist type of product, you probably can bet with a new guy versus a seasoned. But if it's a niche market that you can't find a lot of specialists that know that product and you have to train them into that, you know what? I probably go with the seasoned because they already went through the years of training on that specialist technology or that niche market, let's say.
Sure. $5 isn't going to cut it. You're going to have to go to the bank and take out some more chips.
Yeah. $5? No.
That's the inverse of it. Yeah.
But that is the thing as well, right? When you have all these experienced sales engineers that are working on, you know, in a company for 4 years, 5 years, right? Maybe they're accustomed to it. Maybe they don't want to move. And it's up to you to try to persuade to actually make the move, right? And the way you do it is with the chips.
That's right. Yep. Got to stack the odds. Got to stack the odds in your favor.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Well, this has been after the show. A little bit of extra knowledge chips in there and just a few thoughts. A new little segment. We're going to try to drop these 2-3 minute recaps. And you can kind of think about what you're thinking about when you're coming up with the episode.
I love it, man. These are unfiltered questions.
That's
even
right.
Perfect.
That's right. All right. We're definitely out.
All right. We're out.